Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Now, aren't we all still in great form after those young people? So we'll sort that out now. Journalist and tech entrepreneur Mark Little, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Brendan. Great to be here again.
So, Mark, this day next month, actually, the polls will be opening the US presidential election. So we've been talking about this kind of area a bit over the last while. And I want to get your insights on where the election is at now. And I suppose you have that unique perspective as the tech and internet and kind of information expert. But also, lest we forget, RTÉ's first Washington correspondent nearly 30 years ago. So when you watch this campaign and compare it with campaigns you covered in, say, the late 90s, what strikes you?
I remember just falling in love with this kind of black and white romance of small town America back in like the 90s, late 90s, where you go to these small towns in Iowa and the politician would turn up and be shaking hands outside the high school gym or the bowling alley or the veterans hall and go down to the diner. And you literally could meet the politician, the person who might be the leader of the free world, Maria. And every politician went there. And it was beautiful. It was like Bedford Falls, you know, it's American life. And the community spirit on the campaign trail was so impressive. And there's a great quote from Mario Cuomo, who says, the former New York governor, you know, like, campaigns are in poetry. And there was a certain poetry about that.
Yeah.
And I'm struck by looking back at it now, how much the community, it's not just technology, but those communal bonds have started to slip away and erode. So I used to go to this diner in Iowa every year that there was an election on. And I talked to these elderly diner guys, and they'd seen every presidential candidate since the 1960s. And I once said to them, how do you choose between people who are just like each other? And he said, one guy said, I choose people who are like me, but better. And I always thought that was an amazingly insightful way for Americans to think about their candidates. Today, it seems to me that technology, social media, and this breakdown in these communal spirit, these communal bonds, have left people in love with politicians who make them feel something different. And I just really think, when I look back and going to small towns where I'd interview the local newspaper reporter, those newspapers are gone. The Veterans Hall is gone. Okay. The bowling alley is gone. And that's why when you see statistics telling you that the biggest source of news and politics information these days is social media in those battleground states, up to 40% for those under 30, you start to realize that those old communal bonds that made it so romantic have gone. And this new virtual war has replaced the ground war of politics.
Okay.
Not necessarily always a bad thing.
We've talked before about how there is no shared agreement on reality and facts anymore. So there is no shared election campaign anymore either then, is there?
No, because everything is at the margin. So you roughly have, partly because there's been an incredible rallying of the base by both sides of this political divide, leaving, you know, 47% of people for the Republican candidate, 47 for the Democrat. And the battle now is in the margin. Now, in some ways, it's a good thing, because that good old days of the black and white romance of the old campaign only rewarded certain voices, like overestimated the rural white voice.
Okay.
Today, it's the African-American woman who cares about abortion living in Philadelphia is being listened to in a way never before. Grassroots mobilization of the young people we've just heard on the program there a few minutes ago is so much more important than the old days. So that's the good part of it. People are literally listening to way more voices.
Every segment, yeah. So the Democrats seemed initially, anyway, to be the ones adapting well to that kind of new way. I suppose in a way, like winning on vibes and TikTok and all that kind of thing. And they you know, they had the summer of that. Yes.
Summer of brat. Yeah. So yeah. I suppose if you come back down to it, if there's a defining quote about American politics right now, it's Maya Angelou who said, I won't remember what you said or what you did, but I'll remember how you made me feel.
Yeah.
So emotions are now much more important than words. And this is partly because of technology. Social media, you communicate ideas in short form videos and images and symbols, and therefore it's all about emotion. So when Kamala Harris comes along, she starts to own some of the things that were used to attack her laugh, her sense of humor. And so essentially it's all about the vibes, the emotions, the memes, which is part of internet culture, where an idea transmits to people, not by words, but sometimes by an image. And so you'll see, for example, when Donald Trump talked about dogs and cats being eaten in Ohio, the next day his supporters all had these AI-generated images of him hugging cats. And it was a way for them to bond.
So there's no logic about it all, like, really. It's not rational, any of it. Like, it's
no,
just,
and,
it's
and
just a, here's it. Here's the cartoon.
And the tell cartoon. Is the same story, the cats and dogs. J.D. Vance comes out and he's caught out in the lie. Is there evidence? No, there's not. But if I have to make up a story to tell a bigger truth, then so be it. The other day he's fact-checked in the debate and he said the rule was no fact-checking. So again, it's facts are so much less important when you're going for this sense of rallying your base, but also seeking out those individual slices of the electorate. What really matters is how you're making people feel about themselves, but also then about the candidates as well. So emotion matters so much more than that shared reality, which we all have to agree that's a bond in which we can see ourselves and our society through the eyes of another person. That's not the case in this kind of broken down reality, virtual reality.
Interesting then, right? You mentioned Vance, and if you think about what used to be the National Fireside, the TV, right? People who watched that debate on TV, I'm not sure how many did, but would all have said, well, J.D. Vance kind of won that there. But then it's not about that really, is it? It's about whatever moments or the memes, the clips and stuff that come out of it, isn't it?
Yeah, and the proof point is that big debate between Kamala Harris and Donald Trump didn't move the needle for Harris, even though she was considered to be the winner. The debate the other night where J.D. Vance was clearly the winner doesn't move the needle anymore. What moves the needle is the day after, when someone picks a little video clip, puts it to music, and transmits it through these influencers. So in the old days, the campaigns would knock on the door of Oprah Winfrey because they want to get on the big broadcast talk show host. Today, they're going out and looking for these creators, influencers that have organically gathered these communities, sometimes not politically, but through talking about health or gaming or sports. And now suddenly the campaigns see these people as the conduit to these small slices of America. So the day after, the Democrats will be urging their creator supporters on TikTok to cut up a bit of the debate that looks bad for Vance. And so the battle is the day after in terms of the meme wars that happen. And the proof point is that the needle just isn't moving. Whenever one of these big set piece events happen, the big interview, it's all in this battle going on in this sort of virtual world. And the influencers and creators are so much more important than the talk show hosts or the newspaper
Here's
columnists.
One for you, actually, that you've reminded me of now, which is that I think it was around the time that that Trump had the debate with Kamala, right? And obviously the general view that, you know, Trump had done appallingly. What I was sent then the next day was actually Trump with Theo Vaughn, this podcaster, and Theo asking him about what is cocaine like.
Yeah. And even better one the following week was Aidan Ross, who's this gaming enthusiast who's so outspoken and controversial. He's been kicked off the main platforms. He arrives at Mar-a-Lago with a big Cybertruck and gives it to Donald Trump with a Rolex watch. And they have a conversation in the summer White House, essentially, about, you know, a range of topics that would have been, you know, enough to be cancelled if you're a politician five years ago.
Okay, so the Republicans are looking at an alternative media system, ecosystem completely.
They are, but they're in the choice of these people you've just mentioned.
Yeah.
They're looking at a big fact of life in Western democracy that we don't pay enough attention to, which is this gender gap. Because obviously, years we always think young people will drift toward the left and support the liberal or the left wing. More and more young men are breaking for the conservatives. There's a deep alienated young man who basically gets his society and his politics from people who are talking about gaming primarily or sports, but will drift into politics when the election comes. And those are the people that Trump needs, because he's got that 47%. He needs to flip a section of the electorate that used to go for the Democrats. And these young, generally alienated men, low propensity voters, as they say in politics, are the reason he's doing those kinds of interviews. Because if he can flip them, he gets a margin that may be critical.
Extraordinary. So that brings us on to, I'm interested in this kind of notion you have of politics as a kind of almost an ambient thing now that people take in by osmosis, just another part of the general content.
Yeah, I mean, I think we live in this cloud, you know, of information. And again, if you look at the ways that we get up in the morning, it used to be we turn on the radio, we chose a paper to arrive at the, you know, our front door. We then went in to listen during the day to news. We went down and turned on the radio, television that night to listen to the 9 o'clock news. None of that happens anymore. We are touch, first touch of the day is the phone. And on the phone is an algorithm, which is sending you through TikTok or your social media choice, ambiently these news stories that are being chosen by an editor you don't know exists. So that's the first touch of the day. And if you're under 30, this is natural to you. You've grown up that way.
And I think so you're getting like politics and P. Diddy and whatever else all with equal importance and all mixed in together.
You are, but there's also a smarts creeping into younger people where they go on and they'll choose a personality that they tend to go to for their advice on health or personal finance or mental health. And so there's a lot more people out there, a lot more voices that weren't represented in the broader media environment. So the good news is that younger people are finding voices that are reflecting their reality much better than the mainstream media of old. The bad news is that it's very easy for those people to be manipulated because the algorithms are hidden and we don't know exactly how they work. So I think there's in everything with social media, there's a simultaneously good and a bad reality here.
So the kids are finding their trusted sources, but we don't know how much we trust the trusted some of the trusted sources there.
The studies show us it's a bit like that old guy in the diner I mentioned. They're looking for people just like them, but who are a little bit better and more knowledgeable on a topic. So in some ways, the bond of trust is not that different than the old days. The key thing is for us to make sure that the kid is conscious that they can also be manipulated by those people who feel like them but smarter, and start selling them, you know, bad cryptocurrencies or giving them advice on mental health that goes against their interests. So consciousness is key.
Okay, so it is about educating. We talked the last time about artificial intelligence and kind of especially deep fakes, I guess, and the part it might play in this election. Is it happening?
Yeah, this year we talked earlier on about the fact that this is the first big event of the internet age where 2 billion people are voting across the world. In this election, I think we can say so far that fears that people would release these AI-generated fakes, that they would have an outcome on these elections, has not panned out that way. Thankfully, we haven't seen any election this year where AI has played a big part in changing the election. Fear in the US is not before the election something happening. It's immediately afterwards. We are going to have days, if not weeks, of counting where suddenly someone comes along and shows an AI video, generated video that shows ballots being burnt or disposed. Now, the speed with which that will become a potential weapon in the hands of whoever objects to the result is the big danger. But so far, nothing to say that it's changing the outcome, except, as I say before, these AI-generated videos that are like cartoons that are making people feel good about their candidate, like turning Donald Trump into a cat lover by creating an AI-generated video of him after the cats and dogs incident, or on the Democratic side, people putting music and faking up a video to make Donald Trump look ridiculous when he talks. So that's the kind of the meme wars. That's where it's having an impact.
Okay. And I'm stating the bleeding obvious here, but it's making people laugh.
Yes.
Yeah. Because that makes them feel something.
It does. Makes them feel also part of a group. This is, remember, a very important part. Okay. It's not just to make sure your enemy looks bad. It's to make you look like you're on the right side. And that's the real emotion here. It's making people feel bonded. And that's why we have this like incredibly like almost binary choice between Democrat and Republican. The scale of undecided, it's kind of tiny.
Okay, so most people are like, this is who I am.
Yeah.
This is my tribe. And memes actually are kind of, are a way of creating tribes. Yeah?
It's just a modern representation of when in you're a kid or a teenager, you had the Che Guevara poster on the wall.
Like,
it's the same kind of thing.
It's
a badge of membership.
And who's winning the meme wars, do you think?
So I think that right now, Kamala Harris is winning the war in terms of the money she's spending on influencing the influencers, getting the creators.
Paying these influencers? Yeah.
Now, it's a real murky environment. Okay. Like, for example, during the Democratic convention, about 200 of them came along and got spots that used to be reserved for the mainstream press. And out of that, they got like a bigger reach than they would have got through the nightly news. So she's done very well there. I suspect Donald Trump's doing very well because he's got X, Twitter, Elon Musk, who's appearing with him, by the way, today at a rally. He's got him behind him. So reaching those sort of frustrated, alienated young men, I think Donald Trump is doing very well in that regard. So I don't know if that's enough. History says it wouldn't be, But definitely Kamala Harris has got the money advantage when it comes to this, and they get out the vote.
You keep coming back to that. Trump has potentially identified a group of, what did you call them, those young male voters?
Well, they're called low propensity voters.
But he's possibly identified a new subset to bring into it that could tip him over the edge of this then.
Exactly. And all it takes is for one of those section slivers where it's Maricopa County, Arizona, or Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. We're talking about just a number of thousands of votes and the difference potentially on the day. But remember, like AI and technology, social media, it's really an X-ray of society. It doesn't cause division. It just exposes where there's already a problem, a community not being listened to. And this election is all about using social media on the part of the campaigns to find the fracture, make it worse, get people outraged and turn out.
I have to say, mind blowed as always. Thank you very much, Mark Little. It's a fool's game, but 10 seconds. Who's going to win? Are we underestimating Trump again?
Yes, but it's 30 days. It just looks a weaker in the battleground states, like places like Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin for Harris. But it could be about the get out the vote on the day. And voting actually is beginning in the next few days. So the postal votes will already be going out over the next couple of weeks. But right now, I think Trump has some strengths that people might underestimate. But again, long time. I mean, you know, Irish elections go 30 days. So there's still time there.
OK, Mark Little, thank you so much. We'll take a break.
Text 51551. Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.